This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
That's fine. You know, because it does things no matter what. But this card only does things, like, sometimes. And it's pretty fucking bad, right? Like, I like trying things, but at the same time, I like winning. So...
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI Court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
It's just like, what? Not everything I do is like horrible. Like, you can't have it both ways, old man.
Jay Boosh.
Damn it! Why am I always so ahead of the curve, and then somebody like Owen makes a deck popular, and now I sound like every deck brewer on the planet?
Scotty.
It's actually a secret ploy for her to get you two to spend more time together. Your mom next levels you.
Yeah, like, serious.
And Jeremy.
Do you know how hard it is to buy Korean singles?
No.
And when you put Korean singles into Google's, do you know what you get? You don't get Magic cards.
And now, the A-Team.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 209 of the A-Team Podcast. Mr. Scotty Mack, you couldn't fucking keep me away forever, could you? Motherfucker!
209.
So, Scotty Mack in the his house, coming back for the 2009. Oh, wait.
Guess who's back? Scotty Mack.
Guess who's back? Back.
Tell
that shit's
friend.
Back.
That shit's whack. That shit is whack.
Scott's gonna mack you up. Scott is gonna mack you up.
What?
Mack you up. Scotty's gonna mack you up.
What? So I missed you guys.
Right on.
Yeah, I missed you.
We missed you.
We kind of missed you.
I heard you guys had a hell of a show without me.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, we'll those two did.
Do it again. Oh, yeah.
KYT was there.
You didn't say shit. Again. So.
Business as usual.
Nice. Nothing.
But we love him.
We do love him. Of course we love him.
There was never a question.
Never.
Never.
I love you guys with all my heart and soul, and I'm very glad to be here. So, how was your weeks? How were your weeks this week? Did you guys, like, play Magic? Is there anything new and exciting that you did? Did any of you buy the new Pop Magic Series 2 Planeswalker vinyl figures for $9.99 apiece?
Nope.
What?
No.
You know?
No, I didn't, but I like this round better than all of the others before it.
What's in this round? I don't know anything.
So this is Elspeth.
Okay.
Gideon.
Yeah.
Kiora.
Yeah.
Nicol Bolas.
Say what?
Sarkhan Vaal and Tezzeret.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So this line is way better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vanilla Walkers are so vanilla.
They are so vanilla. But yeah, and they all look really sweet. The Nicol Bolas is hilarious.
I like the Kiora as well. And also, it has her last name on it, which I did not know until I saw the thing.
Atua.
Kiora Atua.
If you were Atua. A Duels of the Planeswalkers player, you would know that.
Rumble Atua.
Yeah, she was first introduced. The first time we ever saw Kiora was actually in Duels of the Planeswalkers 2012, I want to say?
Yes.
Yeah. But and she.
The next place we saw her was in a cool playmat or picture or something like that. I made it into a playmat.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And then, of course, we see, you know, Kiora the Crashing Wave.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's sweet. That was awesome.
We should introduce ourselves. You know,
yeah, I'm
it's everyone's first episode of the A-Team.
That's right, I'm Jay Boot. You might know me from my really popular stream on a website called twitch.tv/JayBoosh. We recently got bought by Amazon for $1 billion. So you might want to watch that and you know, get in on the ground floor before I take off and have no time for you.
My daughter loves likes your stream.
That's great!
Yeah, Lily likes to watch your stream.
Aw, that's
Lily is a very hot commodity right now,
yeah.
So...
Yeah,
she likes... Be careful what you say about Lily.
What are you talking about?
But, but yeah, so she and I were spending a bunch of time this week watching your stream on the weekend.
Nice.
And, yeah, I'm like, hey, look, it's your Uncle Jay. And she's like, hi, Uncle Jay! And she's talking to you like she can talk to you.
Like I can hear her.
Like you can hear her, yeah. And she's so adorable because she's trying to tell you about her new earmuffs that she got and all that sort of jazz. And I'm, like, trying to type in the chat to you. I'm like, hey, quick, say those are super nice earmuffs, you know? Like, trying to break down the fourth wall for her. I'm like, he can't hear you, honey, but he can read what I type for you. Oh, okay.
Kids are great, right?
Yeah, man. So, yeah, it was good.
Yeah. So that's Scott. Anyway, by the way, for everybody else that's tuning in for the first episode ever, that's Scotty Knack. He has a stream as well. It's not as popular. You probably don't want to watch it. It's not very good.
He's saying that just to hurt feelings.
Yeah. It's actually very good. It's actually very good. I had never watched it. I'd been on it before I'd watched it. Then I watched it and was like, blown away by the level of intricacy that is available and is present on that stream.
I next leveled it.
Yeah, put a lot of work into that, and it looks really great.
My beautiful wife got me the only thing that I wanted for Christmas, and she got me my green screen.
Oh, so, man.
So now when you watch my stream, it's no longer like me sitting in a room like a picture.
Production. You could be Bob on Space Mountain.
I am now Bob on Space Mountain.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the one thing that I picked up from watching Day 9 streams, and it's something that I just wanted. I'm just like, God, that looks so sick. Like, it completes the Mystery Science Theater 3000 feel, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, I want it. So I finally got it, and it looks sweet. So check my stream out, too. It's fun. But yeah, we've also got with us, of course, a professional Magic player and content king of Canada.
Eh?
We have KYT, Captain Canada, as he is often dubbed, and the brains, beauty, and brawn behind manadeprived.com, Mr. KYT.
Thank you. That was a great intro.
Thank you.
Very happy to be on the show.
Well, thanks for coming back. I mean, you haven't been on very often, but...
I know. It's been a while. I don't know, episode 105, maybe, is the last time I was on, so...
It's like over
1,900
episodes.
That's right. I think the problem is, folks, is he's too busy running his empire by day and being Batman at night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, when does Batman sleep, right? Because nobody knows.
I mean, truthfully, I think you have to be like an insomniac that has gone a little bit crazy from not sleeping for months to believe you're a bat.
Yes, yeah. And to believe that somehow that is your superpower.
Agreed.
Like, where do you get your source of power? No one can defeat me, I'm a bat. Oh. What if I turn the lights on? Ah, fuck!
I'm gonna go get a wooden broom.
It's not a car.
Like, it's not. I don't wear a hockey pad. have you seen, like, The Great Outdoors?
Yeah.
Where the bat is in the cabin, and, like, fucking Dan Aykroyd and John Candy are wearing, like, baskets on their head, and they catch a bat with, like, a broom and a fucking... like, tennis racket?
Yeah.
This is your superpower? Come on. Like, be Spider-Girl or something. Jeez. Anyway, that's KYT. And he's back. Back again.
And we have with us also Mr. Jeremy Schofield. He is our resident judgical expert.
Judgical expert?
Judgical.
Expert.
Nice.
That kind of sounds like a body part that you kind of want to
focus on. Yeah, judicial. That's better. Judicial.
Judicial expert in all things Magic the Gathering related.
Cool.
We our go-to resource for fairness, equality, and ethics.
Oh my goodness, please don't. If I'm setting the bar in those places, we got a long way to go, boys.
So, yeah, this is the show full of us upstanding, you know, celebrity professionals.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? I mean, I don't really know how we all would ever fit in the same room. Our heads are so large. But speaking of all of us in one room, I heard a rumor that, Jay, you are a most definite maybe. It's Vegas Modern Masters trip?
A definitely maybe. So here's, I guess this is a good point to start the show off on. It's a good, okay. It makes people happy sometimes. Maybe they'll want to be generous. Who knows? So I ran the idea past my wife. And this is exactly what I said. I said, hey, sweetie, FYI, there's like another one of these magical gathering bro-cations happening. And she's like, okay. And I'm like, it's just like Portland, remember? She's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah. And it's happening in Vegas in May. And she's like, okay. And I'm like, but here's the problem. And I'm trying, in my head, I'm like, I don't want
you. I can't take you with
me. I'm like, I don't want you to go, and I don't want to go with you. So how do I say that out loud? So I'm like, okay. But here's the thing. They're all getting a house, and it's going to be like the bro house, and there's going to be some craziness, and then they want me to go there and be with them and do those things. But I really want to, if you come, I want to hang out with you, and I don't want to, like, just have, like, be there, and you just be there, and then we're both there, but we're not together there, you know? And then, like, I don't know, and then, yeah, and she's like, yeah, like, and I'm like, it would just be, like, two vacations, right? We'd be in the same place, but we'd be taking two vacations, effectively, and she's like, yeah, I don't really want to go if you're not going to go, like, with me. And I'm like, yeah, and I don't want to go if you're going to go with me because I want to go with you, but I want to stay in the house, and I know you don't want to. And she's like, yeah, there's no fucking way I'm staying in one of those goddamn houses.
I can totally see what I can say.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not fucking doing that. I'm staying on the fucking strip. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I can't stay on the strip. If I go down there for the location, can't be staying on the strip because then it'll be a total waste of time because I will either want to stay with you constantly or it'll cost me millions of dollars to take a cab out to the middle of the fucking desert wherever these hobos get their fucking peyote cabin. So...
Peyote cabin!
How do you hit ya? And she's like, well, let me check with my girlies and see if I can rope anyone into coming down with me and I'll keep you posted. So, she also said, also see if anyone wants to donate to get you down, because that would help a lot, because we don't have any money. And I said, I don't know if that's going to fly, because we recently did this, and every time I do this, everyone's like, this was the best decision of our lives, we got to hang out with Jay, it was the best time ever, it was so great. And that's the people that were there. And then the people that weren't there are like, what a fucking piece of shit this guy is. So I don't know if that's going to fly, but you're my wife, I'll ask for you. So, yeah. So my dilemma here for the people following along at home is that I would like to go and hang out and party without my wife, but I can't do that. So we both, I can't do that. I'm not sure how it works. Obviously, I'm not asking you to donate money either. This just popped into my head. I'm not trying to get you to donate money so that my wife can go on a vacation. Basically, what my wife is saying...
I'm so glad you caught this as it was coming out of your
mouth. Wow. I just realized that. But what I'm saying is, I can't probably go unless we kind of try to hook something up. And I'm trying really hard by myself here doing that. I'm not asking again for a donation. But what my wife is saying is that I probably can't go without her, because Vegas is her favorite place. And what I'm saying is, I have to bring her physically to the state, but I don't want to hang out with her at all. So we have to go on two different vacations, which means that she's going to use all of the money that we make together to go there on her own little vacation, and then I won't be able to go. So it's one of those, we either both go or we both don't go, but if we both go, then she gets to have all of the our money, because all the our money is the her money, and all the my money is the nun money. So.
Okay, so are we looking for people who have figured out, who have tricks to make it super cheap?
Yeah, I've talked to some people about housing, and the problem for them is that they need confirmation early.
Yeah.
Earlier than later. And I need confirmation. I can't say yes until I know whether or not we can go. And I don't know if we can go until it kind of all happens at the same time. Right. So if I say, yeah, for sure, man, I'm in, like T-Moles, for example, said, hey man, we have a house and you can stay in a queen. We'll figure out the situation. Would your wife be staying as well? And I'm like, well, she'll be coming down with me, but I don't, this was before I talked to her, but I don't know if she'll want to stay in the house. In my head, I'm like, for sure she won't. But sometimes she surprises me. And then, so he's like, well, let me figure out costs, but I wanted to run it by you first. So, like, in theory, I have a house. But if I can't confirm within a timely fashion, I don't want him to hold my spot in case I can't go, right?
Yeah.
I would love to find a cheap flight as well, but I don't really have the resources for that, and I also don't really know how it works. Like, I think I would be on, like, standby or something, and then I'm thinking, like, standby, what happens if I get, like, if I don't make it down there? And then, like, but I don't know how that works, and I don't really know anyone, so I'm trying to figure it all out before we, you know, start the big community drive to get, you know, Jay down there, because, like I said, it creates some controversy where I don't like to create controversy. But, trying to get down there.
Yeah, I'm in a comparable boat where I was able to figure out the accommodations thing, and I'm like, you know what? One way or another, I'll figure out the money.
Yeah, so, I would just walk. I don't know yet.
So I'm honestly about 90% going to this thing. And if I have to try to find a way to raise some extra money by selling blood, semen, or other favors on the street to try to raise some of it, then I'm going to do what I've got to do. But, yeah, I don't think I could possibly ever forgive myself if I missed Magic Mecca.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm thinking. Here's my issues. Why haven't we discussed as, like, having, like, a mana-deprived house? And it doesn't have to be, like, a crazy party house. It could just be the four of us and our wives.
Yeah, I don't...
The unfortunate part is that this conversation probably had to happen a month ago, because I know a few of us already locked in other places, so...
Yep. Yeah, I don't think there's any way I could ever possibly afford to bring the wife with me. Vegas is something we want to do together, but I don't think I could ever justifiably afford it.
Yeah, that's my issue.
I didn't bring her last time. We talked about it this time, and just she's like, you know what? It's right after your birthday, so this is just your birthday trip. So
yeah,
go have fun. So
yeah.
So you're going now too?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So you're going for sure, and KYT is going for sure.
Yeah, I'm a 98%. The only reason I'm 98% is because I literally just haven't booked the flight yet.
Yeah, so, and that's my only...
If I do that, that's the only thing that has not stopped me.
Agreed.
And it's not for, like, fundraising or anything. Like, not, like, you know, the fundraising, getting money from people and stuff like that. It's just literally I've been too lazy to go to WestJet.
That's real rough.
Yeah, like, well, it's just, I tried to budget for these things, so...
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah.
But you've got, like, a semi-successful side business of cracking very lucrative Korean boxes product.
Yeah. Well, it's just doing something I don't really care to do, but it pays ridiculous amounts of money because you guys all drive vehicles. So if you guys want to keep doing that would be fantastic.
Sure.
If OPEC could get their collective shit together and start holding some of their reserves and not selling it all for dirt cheap, that would really help too.
Okay. You heard that, OPEC? Get your shit together.
Fucking OPEC.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that that we're all actively looking to do. Cause, and you know what? Like, I know Vegas was big last year, and it was certainly something – or 2 years ago, and it was certainly something that I wanted to do. I was very interested in doing it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it was just kind of like, did we all really think it was going to be that big? Like, did we – until it was, like, the week before. Did we all really think it was going to be that big? I don't think so. And so now we all know it's decisively going to be that big.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
I would not be surprised. Like, this will be the largest single Magic the Gathering tournament in history. We will demolish all previous records set by Vegas 1. Will we cap? I don't think that's possible. I just, like, if it was the only one that was being held worldwide, then there's a really good reasonable chance that it caps at 10K.
You know what? I think that what they need to do is they need to excite us again, like right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, aren't we doing that right now? Isn't that the point? Aren't we like, isn't that how we're getting there?
But that's what we're doing is we're exciting people right now.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, CFB, who's running the event, they need to launch something really big right away here to kind of do another big push. And then when Modern Masters actually starts to come out, they need to go full on marketing crazy at that point there. So they need to be throwing out big highlights. They need to be throwing out things. They need to be premiering artists. They need to be just throwing out these things that just like say, come into this tournament right at the same time as like they spoil, you know, Liliana or whatever they're going to spoil for this like tournament, like, you know, whatever it's going to be, new Tarmogoyf, new Dark Confidant, you know, maybe a new V-Click art or something crazy, you know, like you can do all kinds of whatever nutty crap you want to do.
Yeah.
But they just have to be there to keep pushing it because that's where this tournament is going to self-promote really, really powerfully because it's got Modern Masters, it's got Vegas, it's got all those types of things. But if they want to get to those numbers, they got to take a page out of the Star City Games book and they got to push it harder.
Agreed.
And they don't have the SCG Open Series to be, you know, the thing that's going to draw on all the viewers for the commercials. So they're going to have to figure out a way to push this.
Yeah.
Like, it might even be the case that, like, all of the Team Channel Fireball guys should be wearing Vegas
shirts, yeah.
Yeah, 2015 shirts. You know, like, if that's what they got to do, like, that's the type of stuff they should be doing if they want to. If they want to get to 10K, that's what they're going to need to do.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, speaking of SCG, they had their Invitational this past weekend, their last one feeding into the Players' Championship. Did any of you guys watch any of the coverage? Any of the dialogues that were happening during that thing?
Not really, actually.
Not me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then it doesn't really matter.
But you know what? I'm going to be watching the Calder Cup coming up here.
The Players' Championship?
Yeah.
Calder Cup. Oh, God. We're going to do this, aren't we? So the last Invitational slot went to 17-year-old Dylan Donegan as he won the Invitational. It was a Standard and Legacy combo, obviously, and his Standard deck of choice, of course, is the Jeskai Tokens list. Looks almost card for card what Yu Yu is playing. I don't know about sideboard. You went with two Hushwing Griff. I don't know if that was in...
Hushwing Griff is an innovation for that deck. Not like a big innovation, but it is an innovation, and it is a ridiculous card in the Sidisi match, like to beat the Giant and Sidisi and stuff like that. Like mm-hmm. That card answers a lot of things. It's also really strong against the Reclamation Mage. Like there's just a lot of cards that solves.
Nice.
And their removal is going to be pointed out a whole bunch of other things, so you have the opportunity to kind of get it out there. And the fact that it's a fragile body is not completely relevant. So.
Sweet.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think the at-large slot for that went to Ross Merriam. Because I see him sort of like at the top of the leaderboard right now on Star City. So that being said, yeah, and actually if I just click on the page, that's it. So I'm sorry, no. Kevin Jones was the Seattle season point leader. And as far as the top 8 point leaders at large, Ross Merriam, Jim Davis, Brad Nelson, G Fabs, Kent Ketter, Logan Mize, Jeff Hoogland, and Stephen Mann all made it in. So you've got like such all stars as Tom Ross, Reed Duke, Chris Van Meter, obviously, and BBD are mainstays. You've got some invitational winners, and Joe Lissette obviously is on there as well. And then all of the previously mentioned guys. So it's going to be pretty interesting. I looked at the sequence, like how this all works, and it's Jeff Foster posted something on Facebook, and I'm sure he's going to be one of the prominent judges for this event. But basically, it's like standard pods.
Yeah, the format is amazing. They nailed it. They figured it out. 100% the way that it should be done. I love this. It's way better than what Wizards did for the world champion.
Yeah. So you've got... Oh, God, how can I... I gotta try to
you
find
have
this.
Four pods of four.
Yes.
They play in standard. Those four pods will do round robin, so they'll play each other player in their pod. First place in each of those pods moves on to day two. The next players... Oh, my goodness. I got it here. Okay, so second place gets a bye into the afternoon double elimination. So third and fourth have to play a match with somebody from another pod. So they'll play outside their pod. The loser of those matches, of the third and fourth place playing other people in the pods, go home. The winner goes to that afternoon legacy double elimination. So what they'll do there is they'll play a double elimination match type thing. Anyone who's 2 or 1 goes on. Anyone 1 or 2 goes home. So what that's going to lead into is you're going to have at day two where you're going to have 8 players left. So you cut half of your players in the first half, and those people will break into 2 pods of 4. They'll play round robin again. First place from both pods buy into the top 4. Second and third, they will play against. So second will play third from another, the other pod, and third will play second from the other pod. So they'll cross pod, second versus third, so on and so forth.
The winners advance and the losers go home.
Yeah. Winners advance to the top 4, losers go home, and fourth place in the regular round robin goes home as well.
Yeah. So what's interesting is that if you come in last in your pod at any point, you're out.
No, in the first day, if you come last in your pod, you
you're double elimination.
Yeah, you can play into the double elimination.
Yeah. So it's really neat because it's not about like points or match wins per se. Yeah. It's just about like winning the matches that you need to win. So it eliminates the dumb shit like the Japanese drawing to lock themselves into top 4.
Yeah.
Like, that was, well played on their behalf to get the math right, but, I mean, it was shitty for the rest of us watching, I think.
Yeah, it wasn't fun to watch. And the thing that's really cool about this is that when you watch, like, a GP-level event, you start to see players who aren't just the best player. Like, you see the matches that really kind of feel like they matter when it's getting to, you know, round 13 and stuff like that, because you see the players who are starting to, like, play their win-and-ins. Like, if this person loses, whoever loses is out of the tournament. And you kind of get to play a few of those matches. You know, for the next 3 matches, you get to watch, like, elimination matches. With this one here, the round robin itself is going to be kind of a discovery time, I think. You're going to see a lot of decks featured. You're going to see cool matchups. You're going to see that kind of stuff happen. And then as soon as the round robin's over, you get the last round of the round robin where the undefeateds play against each other and they have the chance to get their buy into the thing there. So you have kind of an excitement match. And then you get to see the loser playoff match. You get the third, fourth place playoff matches in the other pods where if someone, whoever loses, goes home. So you've got drama there. And then they move into like this legacy double elimination thing. So you got new decks. You get a little bit of stuff going on there. And again, you're going to have, after the first round, you're going to have an elimination match followed by another elimination match. So then you have all these elimination matches that are happening. And then day two, you get to repeat the whole thing. And those matches, pretty much from like the second match in, are starting to trim players. So you have players who are just falling out of the tournament at any point. It's like watching like, you know, bad reality television where each match they're throwing a player, they're sending a player home. So you keep seeing the tournament like evolve through the whole period, and that's what I really like about this. Is it isn't just like this whole okay and everything's done and these are the players that matter. It's people are just falling off the bus left, right, and center. So that's what I like about this.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm. I think it's going to make for some exciting Magic. And that's what's really, really nice. And they've got the good team. You know, Star City does the best job at commentary. Not close. Like,
not close.
I mean, the numbers really show it. Unless we're talking about a pro tour or like that top level event, SCG kills all of the GPs for coverage. So I just think that, you know, Cedric and the boys are going to do a really good job, and I'm really excited to see how it comes up with. My opinion, however, is not the only opinion.
Interesting.
That's a first.
No, but... So, realistically, if you were to go and read, say, one Matt Sperling's Twitter feed,
yeah,
you might come across a bit of a dissenting opinion. So, Matt Sperling. Good old Matt Sperling. Started with the comment to say, why don't I care about this SCG Players Champ? And then recalled, I've never watched minor league championships of any kind. I don't think this is shots fired stuff. I mean, how would you describe watching Worlds and then not caring for this other one? Worlds was 24 people, SCG Champs was 16, Cardmageddon was 48. How do they choose the numbers for these exclusive events? And then he goes on to say something, he's trying to defend himself and say...
Yeah, because as soon as he said it, everybody was just like...
Most specifically like Todd Anderson?
Yeah.
You know, he basically said, you know, Todd said, your attitude towards the Players' Championship is toxic. Why are more high-profile tournaments bad? How is any of this constructed? Why? And he says, of course, my attitude is not wanting to watch the event. My attitude not wanting to watch the event is only toxic if you have a crazy sense of entitlement to my viewing time. It goes on and on. Like, this is so crazy. And, like, Patrick Sullivan gets involved. And Brian Kubler basically just says, it's about ethics in stream-watching journalism. You know, Sperling tries to say 12 out of 16 players aren't even qualified for the PT. It is what it is, a good minor league offering. At which point, I guess it was Shrout. Andrew Shrout jumps in and proves that much more than that are actually qualified. God. Anyways, Johnny Hot Sauce to the rescue. But it's absolutely insane. And I just cannot even believe that all of this drama is going on. And I don't know whether it's just like he's just doing it to get a rise out of people and stay relevant. But, you know, people are basically saying, hey, Tom, like, you know, Tom, you need to step in here. We would love to see a stream of Tom Martell, the Troll Slayer, arguing these points with Sperling. That's all we want. We just want the stream. Just show us the stream.
That would be a fun little in-between match segment.
Oh, God. I'm just... Like, there's so many dissenting opinions about this Players Championship, and all I can say is I think this is one of the best things the Star City Games has ever done. And I really think that this Players Championship has been enough incentive for a lot of the higher-level players to really get out and start attending events. Like, they really suffered when they started to take away the players' rewards, right? I mean, we heard the stories from Jerry. We heard the stories from AJ, like, and even CBM, right? As soon as they stopped doing things like buys and cash appearances and all that sort of stuff, like, the grinding basically came to a halt. And so they were like, all right, well, that's fine. We'll still do this open series, and we'll do really well with coverage, and we'll do all of these things and make it sort of like the best television experience that we can give Magic the Gathering, right? And they did that. They succeeded in that. I don't think there is a single event that you can watch that will provide as much production value as SCG does to their events. And if you want to challenge me and say the Pro Tour is the only exception, that's the only one I'm willing to debate on. Like, honestly. And it's just insane. Like, it's actually insane. And so now what they've got is, well, everyone's going to these events, and that's a thing, and they're getting bigger, so let's give them something to shoot for. Let's give them something to strive for. So they make the Players' Championship. And it gives all of those grinders a reason to grind again. But they put a view to the end of the grind. So if you qualify, you don't have to worry about it again. So that's cool. You don't have to grind events if you just win the invitationals or you win some whatever, or you win your points, and that's great. But it also, you can spike a tournament, just like a PTQ, but you can also just grind tournaments, become the point leader for the season, and then you're good too. So it kind of rewards both behaviors, which I think is great, because it allows, you know, the ringers that think they're so amazing and above the minor leagues to come in, put their money where their mouth is, spike a tournament, read Duke, and, you know, basically just show up and see what he can do. And I think that's great. Now the events are getting so big and so popular that they've gone to 2 days for the events, and they basically become Grand Prix. So let me see if I've got this right. So we get a Star City GP every weekend, almost, and they've actually got this, like, Players' Championship Pro Tour thing that, you know, could actually be on par from a reward standpoint that's pretty damn close to, you know, to, like, the Players' Championship or whatever. That's pretty fucking sweet. I think it's a good place to be in Magic right now. But, again, who am I, right? I'm just some idiot who yells at people on the internet. So, I don't know. What do you guys think? Like, are you? Can you not wait to watch this? Like, is this something that's exciting for you or what?
I like, for instance, I love World Junior Hockey because you see a whole bunch of people that you don't really know.
And Canada always does well.
No, they haven't been doing well. They do well, but they don't do great. They've been on a pretty bad streak. But I kind of like seeing these guys because you see a lot of guys who kind of have made their way up through this. So it definitely does have like the junior feel. It has like the minor league sports feel. And that's unfortunate if, you know, you're going to view that as a negative thing. But like this is a way that a lot of people are kind of getting themselves a name without having to top in a pro tour or having to win a GP and stuff like that. So there's a positiveness to that. What I'm really most excited for is the format and is the coverage and is the production. You know, they're doing an amazing tournament. They've got great players, but do they have pro tour quality players? No. But they do a very, very good job at popularizing these players. Like, should CBM be as popular as he is? Under the traditional scope of things, no, but he is entertaining. He is doing extremely well in this circuit. And because of that, like, we know who he is. They've done a great job of kind of building up that. They build their own heroes very well. So there's an entertainment there. And the game is still high-quality Magic. Like, if you enjoy watching the best players at your local shop play against each other, you will be blown away by this because it's going to be better quality than that. But it's not, you know, Pro Tour Top 8 quality. And can we expect it to be? No. But do we need to expect it to be? No. I just hope that they run a very good tournament and that the folks at Wizards are paying attention and that they steal the good stuff. Nothing wrong
with
that.
There's some decent names in there.
I know.
Oh, no, absolutely, absolutely. Don't get me wrong. There's some decent, like, there's good players, but we're not talking, like, Players' Championship, like, or World Champion names. Like, Tom Ross, absolute sicko. Reed Duke, absolute sicko. But, like, BBD's been on a tear, but is he an absolute sicko? Not really.
He might be, but yeah, you're right, not yet. And
like, that's the thing, is that like he has the potential. He is a crazy sick player. There's a lot of extremely good players. All of these people I would not want to play a game of Magic against in a competitive environment where I was hoping to make money. These are guys I would love to dodge. But
right.
This roster has, you know, some great names, and it has a lot of like the Star City Games guys. It's, I think of like, again, I'm going to go back to hockey because this is a Canadian-based podcast. Patrick Thorsen. He was an Edmonton Oiler. He was okay. I really enjoyed him. He played some good games. He did some good stuff. He was a good player on the team, but he was still like a third-line guy. Like, he wasn't, would get bumped up a line and he'd have, you know, a little tear and, you know, it'd be really awesome, you know, like, because he was like this underdoggy type of guy. And, you know, he was okay in the NHL, but he didn't stick. He goes to the KHL, and now he's like one of their premier players. He is one of the best players in the KHL. Like, he draws a crowd and stuff like that. And that's how some of this is. Like, some of these guys, you know them from Star City Games tournaments. You don't know them really from the Pro Tour or anything like that. Like Joe Lissette, like you see him every week. Ross Merriam, Jim Davis, Kent Ketter, like those are names that I recognize from the Star City Games. Yep. I don't recognize them from the GPs or the Pro Tours.
Yep.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, these guys very well could use this as a springboard. Like, these guys are playing a tremendous amount of Magic. And the reason why I know them from Star City Games is because they just have been choosing to play these tournaments instead of playing the GPs.
Yeah, and I mean, because they've been grinding this circuit instead of the GP circuit.
Yeah. Yeah. But these are also players that, if they were to propel themselves to the Pro Tour, if they were to make it. And one of the things about the Pro Tour is that, yes, the best players are always going to be consistently there, but it is hard to get on the train and stay on the train. So spiking tournaments is a big thing to do. And these guys are probably just seeing better value in grinding the Star City Games chain than instead of grinding the trying to get to the Pro Tour train. Because one is at the sacrifice of the other for these guys. You know, Star City Games runs so many tournaments all over, like, North America, all over the United States. These are all United States players, pretty much. So that's going to be, these guys are making the decision every weekend. Hey, are we going to go to Charlotte for an SCG, or are we going to play the local pre-TQ? And, yeah, they're going to go to Charlotte for the SCG.
See, and here's what's interesting to me, because I think, honestly, I would play an SCG event over a pre-TQ fucking any day of the week. Honestly, any day of the week.
It depends where you want to get to.
Well, no, because if I really wanted to hit the Pro Tour, I'd grind the GP circuit. Because that's the best way to get to the Pro Tour now.
Yeah, it is. 100%. They've moved all the invites that way.
Yeah. I mean, they have to maintain the grassroots road to the Cup. Right? That's how it was founded. That's how the Pro Tour was founded.
Yeah. And they also need a reason to give away sick Lilianas.
I mean, they're pretty gross, right? So, you know, and that being the case, I mean, that makes a lot of sense that, you know, but the PTQ system as it was is busted. They're getting huge. They're enormous, whatever. They might as well be mini Grand Prix anyway. Blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, if I lived in the States, I would totally be grinding the SCG circuit. Because, I mean, like, it's all about the dollars. And if what you're looking for is a road to the Pro Tour, then stop grinding your pre-TQs, and you can go and grind GPs. And, I mean, like, SG even has the SG IQs, which are basically pre-TQs. So, I don't know, man.
Like, that's the thing, is we have some IQs in Alberta and stuff like that happen, mostly in Calgary. But it's one of those things that, like, if you do win that, like, still the trip down to the Invitational is pretty tough, you know, to make that trip. So it's one of those things that, like, if they were to ever come to Canada, it would be a very interesting story. But we do have a Manager Prize Super Series, which has been pretty badass. So
yeah, it's getting bigger next year. I, on the subject of pre-TQs, I'm not convinced yet until I go through a season of it.
Okay.
Just because we've had people like, you know, like Andy Peters, one of our best friends in Magic. He took one down in Kingston that was under, I guess, 40 people, and you know, I think from talking to him, he told me it was basically a cinch, and that, you know, he didn't have to fend off against the contenders from Ontario or Quebec coming down to Kingston to fight against him. So he was the end boss there, and he took it down. And I have two this upcoming weekend that I plan to play in, so I'm going to see how I feel. Like, 5 rounds just to get to the next tournament, and then the next stage, it's top 8 makes it, so.
Yeah, and, like, that's the thing to these, is that these are not supposed to be ridiculously hard tournaments. You know, this is the weeding the people out tournament. This is, you know, send us your champion.
Yep.
Tournaments. Like, yep. They're very, very grassroots. You know, it's supposed to send the best guy in the store to the PTQ. Mm-hmm. To weed out those first, you know, 4 rounds at the PTQ. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, we had this weekend, Marcel Zafra. Because we've got 3 that have now happened in Edmonton. And, yeah, Zafra got one of his, he locked up one of them playing Splinter Twin. Which I love those guys, because those guys are hilarious, because once they were done, they drove to a Winners just so that he could stand in front of Winners and hold the card up with Winner in the background. So, you know, like, that's the type of stuff that those guys do, so I got a kick out of it. But that's going to be the thing, is that we're going to see, you know, like, there's the sickos who would normally travel and stuff like that to hit up these tournaments. These are the guys who are going to be taking down these tournaments. The nice thing is that we've been doing a lot of tournaments in the city. Like, we've had three tournaments in Edmonton, and all three of them had $400 airfare credits to go to Vancouver to play at the PTQ. So, like, our stores have stepped up pretty big on it for that kind of aspect, because that was, you know, like, a big thing. It's like, okay, you win this thing, you still have to go to Vancouver. So that's kind of tough, but yeah. I know that we have at least one more tournament in Edmonton that's going to be doing that, so I'm excited for that one, because I'll get a chance to play in it right before I go back to work, so.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm expecting to, like, yeah, I want to wait before, I'm leaning towards GPs being easier, like, that's I think, our cast general
consensus, yeah.
Consensus for now, but I want to,
the easier it'll be.
I want to feel like what it's going to be like the once I if I qualify for the PTQ in Montreal, to see how it feels like and how hard it is. I expect myself to top 8 at least one of my tournaments. This, like, you can win, draw, or like Andy said, he played in round 4 because he wanted to lock up being on the play in the top 8, and I think that is important. So if it were up to me, if I were up to 3-0, I would play round 4 and not go for the draw there. So, yeah, I'll see. I think I'm pretty confident, though I haven't touched Standard in a while, but
What are you playing? Happy. You playing Jeskai Tokens? I think I was watching you talk to, like, Chion and that sort of stuff about it, right?
Right. So I decided to, after a long time, I promised to make some constructed videos and released my first one this morning, which was on Jeskai Tokens. Leaned towards that because that was a deck that everyone was hyped about, that AJ thought was the sickest deck in the tournament, though his opinion has changed since I've talked to him, like, because I think you mentioned to me he changed it to more control-y, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At one point.
Yeah. He also played Azan Whip, I think, in Vegas.
Yeah, so he told me, like, he wasn't, in his testing, he wasn't finishing people fast enough with his Jeskai control, more controlling version, and so he just went with Azan Whip, and he thinks it's Azan Whip not close as the best deck, and obviously one of my heroes in Magic, Jerry, believes that to be it's his pet deck, so he doesn't consider it by far the best deck. He thinks there's a number of tier one decks, and I think that's what a lot of people are feeling. But I just was excited to watch you play that deck, and that deck looks the most fun and has Ascendancy and Treasure Cruise in the deck, and I've been having a lot of success online. I've played maybe just a handful of 8-mans, managed to win one, finish in the finals of another one. The tough matchups are definitely, for me, decks that have Doomwig Giants, and not only that, plus Drowning Sorrow.
Yeah.
Both of them, I mean, just, and it's hard for me to know right now how to sideboard against that plan, because sometimes you just win because you just apply pressure and stroke one of the Giants or a Hornet Queen or whatever and win the game and burn them out, right? You just need that early damage from your Raise the Alarm and Goblin Tokens to get in just enough for Stoke the Flames, Jeskai Charm to get there. And you're going to draw a lot of burn spells because you have Treasure Cruise. But sometimes it's just like, okay, you go Seeker into Rabble Master, but they can drown you and then you're fucked. So I haven't figured that out yet.
See, I always took out Rabble Master in that matchup. I take out Rabble Master, and the card that I need to stop the most, the card that scares me the most in that matchup, is not the Doomwig Giant. The Doomwig Giant is it hurts. The Hornet Queen or whatever is also another one that's just really tough to deal with. But it's the Whip. I always feel that if I can keep a Whip off the table, I will win this match. Like, I will win the game. I will be able to take it down. But I need to keep Whip off the table.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, I was watching somebody stream, and there was a case where the guy had a Course of Routes. You saw that there was a Whip on top of the deck. He had a Stroke in hand, and his opponent casts like a Seed Rhino or something like that, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna counter this." And it was just like, I can't wrap my head around this because the next turn, Buddy drops the whip, and now you're trying to like burn a guy out who's gaining like six a turn because he's just attacking you with all of his stuff that's got big asses that doesn't really seem to matter, but it's killing you. And when you do kill things, it comes back. And that deck gets a lot of value out of the stuff that comes back. There's a reason why it's built that way. So I always feel if I can keep Whip off the table, I can beat the deck, no problem. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem. If I have to face down a Seed Rhino, I'd rather face down a Seed Rhino than a Whip.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah, my buddy Jeremy Beach, who's been playing that deck quite a bit, says the exact same thing. He said, you just hold your fucking counters for the Whip. You can beat everything else. You can't beat the Whip.
I definitely agree with that. I've been trying different plans. I've sideboarded out like even like all my Rabble Masters, maybe some amount of Seekers even, and just focusing more on the burn plan. And then I've tried another plan to keep them in because and take some of the token spells out because at least they don't die to Doomwake Giant, like the tutus. But like if they have some amount of Drowning Sorrows, then it doesn't even matter. So it's been a little bit of mixing and matching to see like what I really like gameplay wise. And of course we've seen I mentioned earlier in the show SCG winner put in the Huskwing Griff like two copies in his version. He's got a few innovations of his own. Like Art Lightning was not played in Yuya's list.
Yeah. Art Lightning is something that's been talked about a few times. Even at our pre-TQ, we're kind of on the Art Lightning thing, and I don't know. I just don't like it. I don't think it does enough.
And I think he also moved away from a plan that that was criticized at the World Championships, which is the End Hostilities plan. Like this, the SCG winner didn't have any. Just cut them all out for the Griffs, for extra negate, I think, and for the Arc Lightnings. So, I don't. How do you feel about that, Jer?
End Hostilities, I could see it going. Like, I really like the Griffs, and that might be the direction that I would take it, is to get rid of the End Hostilities. But when I'm playing the End Hostilities, I'm like literally turning into a burn control deck, where my token spells, I'm just hoping to get whatever, you know, the amount of tokens I'm getting in damage out of them. And that's the reason why I like them, is that you kind of attack their one-for-one removal. And I didn't care too much about like the fact that they die to Doomwake Giant, because I feel like Doomwake Giant is going to kill my other creatures. It's going to kill my Rabble Master. It's going to kill my Seeker, because they're just going to have a way to kind of make it kill those things. So I don't care that my token spells die to Doomwake Giant, because when they don't die to Doomwake Giant, when I can keep the stuff alive, like, it's going to get enough damage through. And again, like, just if I can shut off things like the Murderous Cut or any, you know, single targeted removal a little bit better, I'm happier with that.
Okay.
Like, I just find Goblin Rabble Master really, to me, feels like the worst card in the deck. It's my first cut all the time.
I think a lot of people say the same thing, and I think, in my experience, I don't even care if you have a Rabble Master.
Yeah, it's one of those cards where it can take a game away. Like, it puts a person on the back foot, especially in a game one situation. It can really put a guy on the back foot. Yeah. And it's almost like a bait, in a sense. It's like, here, spend your resources dealing with this, because the other stuff is what you should be afraid of. And it's one of those cards that if it isn't answered, you know, it can just do that. But when you get into a game two, game three situation where all of a sudden they bring in the Drowning Sorrows, they bring in the tools that are better to deal with that.
Like, Bioblighting, like, after a guy goes, like, turn three Goblin Slide or whatever it's called, get three tokens. I still don't know the fucking name of this stupid card.
But Goblin Slide, it's funny because it's an actual card in the format, but not the card.
That do whatever you like deck.
Well,
in a really, really budgety version of the deck, I suppose.
This is what I mean. I think this card.
Holding Outburst is the card.
Holding Outburst. This is what I think. I think I would probably never play that card either. That's why I think they're the same card or whatever. But anyways, they play that on turn three, then they go, like, turn four, Rabble Master or whatever. And that's, like, the best, I guess, play that they can make. Right? And then you're just like, well, Bioblight, your token, I guess. I guess nice fucking nothing you have. And then after sideboarding, it's even better. So that's just, I don't know, it seems like a card that when you have the nut, it helps you have the nut. But when you don't have the nut, it's garbage. If that makes any sense to you. You know what I'm saying?
You have to be somewhat ahead where they can't basically block the 1/1. Like, a lot of times, like, they have open mana and they just don't have the Lightning Helix or the Magma Jet or whatever.
Yeah.
The Heroes Down. They only have 2 mana. They can't Heroes Downfall yet, so you at least get a token out of it. I am curious about, because I'm looking at all these sideboards. I haven't, you know, I'm still new to the format, and I'm seeing more Drowned Sorrows than Bile Blights.
Yeah.
And if that is the case, then, like, it seems like, you know, if I knew the entire room was all these black decks, then it seems like Mantis Rider is a better card in the format. Right now, maybe even.
You know, it's interesting because I've been seeing some lists pop up that are actually running, that card again in that deck.
What card?
Mantis Rider,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't think they took it out. I think Mantis Rider is a great card, and I'm way more afraid of that card than any other card in that deck.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I have no cards that deal with it at all, except for my removal that I've probably used on a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
Or that I'm saving to use on, like, a fucking Planeswalker or something, right? And it also has the Haste and Vigilance, so there's, like, so many turns where you're like, oh, okay, turn three, play a fucking Courser of Krufix, flip over, I don't know, another Courser, a fucking Caryatid, a land, like, flip something over that I don't want to see, really. And then you're like, Mantis Rider, crack, you go. And now I can't attack, and I can't block, and I have to have an answer now, or I lose.
Yeah, that's true.
That's how my games against it go. Is like, I have to have an answer against it now, or I lose. Somebody was also saying they played a version of the Jeskai deck where it's just mostly burn tokens instead of, like, combo tokens,
yeah, or whatever. Yeah, get rid of the creatures and stuff.
Yeah, and he said that he keeps, like, again, when he's sideboarding, often he will keep in, against Abzan, he'll keep in Mantis Rider so that I keep in Bile Blights, which are dead cards against him after sideboarding, except for Mantis Rider. So I'll, like, hold them for Mantis Rider and thinking I've got some fucking, like, value if he plays a Hordling Outburst or something. But he doesn't play those, and he transitions into more of, like, a control burn deck. Like, kind of, I guess. I've only played the matchup once, so all I know is he's, like, 16-0 with the deck right now. So, like, that's something that's, like, super relevant, because it worked every time. I just kept the fucking Bile Blights in, and then was, like, every time he played a fucking Mantis Rider, I was like, ooh, like, do I Bile Blight this? And in my head, I'm like, if I Bile Blight this, he fucking Hordling Outbursts me next turn. For sure. Fuck this game. And then I'm like, well, do I want to use a fucking Hero's Downfall later on a fucking Goblin token?
Yeah.
God damn it. Like, ugh. And it worked every time. And then I would never have the Bile Blights, or I would draw them, and he didn't have anything I wanted to use it against. And he plays, like, a Planeswalker or something, and I'm just like, ah, shit.
Were you playing Genjay? What's your deck?
Abzan. It's like, okay. I would say that it's aggro, but I'm not.
Are you
sure.
Are you playing Lions?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's playing Lions. He's playing the Abzan.
Are you playing Brimaz?
No, I don't have any Brimaz.
But you're not playing Death Dealer.
I am playing Death.
Okay, so you are playing aggro.
Yeah.
So isn't your mana fucking terrible, though?
No, it's a fucking great.
Really?
I never have a problem with
that. Oh my god. So you're playing, like, main deck Bile Blights and Downfalls and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, you're gonna have to ship me your mana base, because I played the list that Jerry put in put on the select side for his daily deck digest. It was called Sigrist's Revenge, because it's, like, basically a rehash of Mike Sigrist's Abzan Aggro list.
Mm-hmm.
And I played it, and the mana was so bad, I was like, I literally announced on stream, I would rather claw my face off than continue to play in this
game. I find the worst The worst thing that I find is when I have basic lands in my opening hand. Those are the worst games I have. Other than that, my mana is generally fucking great, and I never have a problem.
Wow.
But, I mean, I think it's meta-dependent as well. My meta is all aggro decks all the time. That's all anyone jams where I play. And if they're not bad. It's not like budget lists or anything.
Yeah.
They'll just jam every fucking aggro list they can play. They will fucking jam that shit. So I was playing mid-range aggro, which is way too slow somehow against like all these aggressive decks because you don't have a whole lot of removal that you can just kind of throw away. And when you do have removal, they have something for it, or they have 10 guys or whatever. So then I was trying to think of a way to, like, I was basically, my sideboarding was the same every single game. And so I decided, well, fuck this. What if I just kind of tweak an aggro deck a little bit and tweak my sideboarding a little bit so that my deck is just a little bit more aggressive against the few people that are like me who don't want to play just like balls to the wall aggro, but also so that I can kill the aggro decks with Vile Blight, Drowning Sorrows, and or just trading my guys for theirs. Like I play 12 two drops that all can attack. So
you're not playing Caryatids or Coursers though.
I am playing Coursers, but I feel like I shouldn't be. But it's really difficult for me to get any analysis out of them because I don't draw them a whole lot. So I'm always like, well, I don't know. I guess sideboard these out. Like, fuck.
It's interesting because
that's
one of the things that I felt actually missing in the deck. Sorry, I just like I think if you're playing with Coursers, that's actually a huge advantage.
Yeah, like
because it cuts out a lot of your dull draws.
I'm not drawing.
Like, he's not an aggressive guy.
No. But, I mean, like, he doesn't need to be a...
No,
threat.
No.
Go ahead, Jay. It's your turn.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying, yeah, he's not aggressive. He blocks really well. And the thing that I really like about him is he just gets the land out of my fucking deck.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then I just draw Doomblades. I have, like, I just use all my two drops as Doomblades until they run out of gas. And then I, like, fucking Rhino them or I monstrous one of the kitty cats. That's my game plan. So I'm playing aggro, but I don't play it. Generally, I'm not playing it super aggressively, like how the tokens deck would be played. But what do I know? I'm a scrub.
Well, the aggro deck obviously is not like the Abzan aggro is not as aggressive as the tokens deck, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think is really interesting about Abzan is you've got the traditional Abzan mid-range, like Arylaxis was the most mid-rangey of mid-range Abzan lists, right? And your list is trying to be a little bit more aggressive, but then if you look at the list that, like, Sean McLaren's advocating, like, that's a control deck. And it's so fucked up to me how, like, six cards make the difference between those three things. So, I don't know, man. Like, maybe Jerry's article had it right, and we're all evaluating our fucking tempo incorrectly.
Yeah, probably.
So, I don't know. But yeah, I've been piloting a pile of different mid-range stuff, and I tried four-color mid-range for a while last week, and that was exciting, because you get to play, like, Crackling Doom, which is sweet.
Oh, that's the card I want to play the worst. I want to play it so badly.
Yeah, and by the way, the card's super good.
Yeah,
it's like really wicked awesome. And the mana in the four color deck was when it was good, it's amazing. If you have like turn two Caryatid,
yeah,
then that deck's insane. Like the deck is amazing.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that and or a Courser, then your deck's a steaming pile of shit.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, it was the Crackling Doom was super good because like it shores up your matchups against Heroic, which all of your targeted removal is basically shitty against. But I don't think you can possibly play the aggro version again, like in that sort of shell. Like I don't know if you can play Death Dealers and Fleece Mane Lions. Like all those cards require like so much color commit, I guess. So I don't know. It's, but the Crackling Doom was really, really good. And even just putting the Butcher the Horde with that like the 5/4 flyer being super good. So you've got just like these insane 4 drops all day, every day. But I mean, if you can't cast your spells, then it doesn't matter, right? So yeah. I'm back to looking at just straight Abzan myself. I'm just going to bite the bullet, play the best deck in the format.
Yeah, I have not had a bad experience with it at all. I love it.
Gordon Tonner, the guy who won the MDSS Calgary, we had 2 pre-TQs for a flight. So the Saturday was Modern, and that was the one that Marcel won with Twin. On the Sunday, Gordon Tonner took his Abzan deck and just crushed that one. So he got the flight to the PTQ as well. And yeah, casting Siege Rhino is a very powerful thing to do.
Yeah, and I had not really played Siege Rhino per se in this format, short of just kind of like touring the decks. So it was still very early, and it didn't really stick how ridiculously stupid that card is.
4/5 trample with Lightning Helix? Okay.
I mean... I've been known to cast my fair share of Lightning Helixes, and...
Yeah, like, I didn't think this card was good either. I think it's because of the mana cost.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, then you kind of look at the rest of the format, right? And, I mean, the rest of it's just geared. I mean, the cards that you play with that Siege Rhino just do such a good job of helping you get there, no questions asked, and just, yeah. Like, stop. As soon as you start playing Rhinos, your opponent mm-hmm. can't possibly win.
Holy fuck. So... I played Abzan on Friday, and we made some changes to the deck, and fuck my ass, my deck is not here. It's upstairs. So I don't remember the exact changes that we made in terms of what came out. But what went in, I was like, okay, so I'm having this discussion with Jeremy.
What went into my ass was
my so Jeremy is my backer for IRL Magic. He heard that I don't play Magic anymore because I've talked about it for the last, like, probably a billion on the show, and that I don't really want to play Magic anymore because I can't afford to get into Magic because I have 0 cards and I don't like and all this stuff. So he said, hey, what if I have a deck and you just play it? If you like it, great, we're back into Magic. If you don't like it, well then, no problem. So he hooked me up with Abzan, and so did a bunch of other people. They gave me some random cards, Neil, a local judge, a good bro, Mike, and Cass, and I kind of cobbled some stuff together. So we're sitting down, and we're talking about our matchups, and we're helping him with Teemer, and he's helping me with Abzan, and I'm talking about how I feel like I want some Reclamation Sages. I thought Reclamation Sage was a 2-drop, which is why I thought everybody thinks this card is good. But it's a 3-drop, and it has 1 toughness.
That's right.
Like, I don't know why people think this card is good. It's not good.
It's pretty good.
But I'm like, okay, I feel like I should play some of these. And he's like, okay, and he gets 1 out of his box of cards, and he's like, here you go. And I'm like, do you think 1 is enough? He's like, well, fuck, do you want more than 1? Like, do you need more than 1, you think? And I'm like, well, no. But I don't like sideboarding single cards, especially if they're narrow like this. Like, if it was fucking Doomblade or Murder or something, that's fine. You know, because it does things no matter what. But this card only does things, like, sometimes. And it's pretty fucking bad, right? Like, I like trying things, but at the same time, I like winning. So, he's like, okay, well, how many do you want to play? And I'm like, I don't know, like, 4? And he's like, no. And I'm like, yeah, because you want to draw it. I'm of the mind that if I'm sideboarding cards, I want to draw those cards. If I'm not going to draw them, then what's the point, right? So he's like, all right, whatever. I'll go buy 3 of them and fucking you can put them in your sideboard for a day and then we'll sell them because they're garbage. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. I call your bluff, you fucker. So he goes and gets 4 Reclamation Sages for me. Then I also am I'm like, man, you know what seems really good? Fucking that sorcery, which is a sorcery. That exiles a white permanent?
Glare of Heresy.
Glare of Heresy. Now,
Glare of Heresy is a magic card.
Yeah. There are people that are playing that card main deck at my store.
Yeah.
Because there's, A, it's pretty good. B, there's so much white that you can get away with it.
Yep.
So I'm like, what about Glare of Heresy? He's like, yeah, you should be playing that for sure. So those go in. I don't, again, remember what came out. I'm sorry that I can't tell you. I'll tell you next week. So anyway, we're playing. I go to a quick 3-0 on the back of these cards. Like, the fastest fucking ranching of all time. The deck like this. So we're playing in game one. In match one, I'm playing Sam. Sam's pretty nice. I've never played him before, and he seems to know what he's doing. He is friends with fucking James Kong. And James Kong, for the record, I'm not talking shit about James Kong. James Kong is Dr. Claw. There's no such person as James Kong. It's not James Kong. It's fucking James Kong. When people read the pairing sheets, they're like, oh, Scott McCallum against James Kong. Fucking James Kong! Because he will kill you. You can't beat James Kong for a couple of different reasons. James Kong will wear you down by trading with you first. He will pack power Medina you, and you, and then you wanna you leave and you think you had a great deal, and boom! Instead of getting cards, you got fucking KYT spirit tokens, and you traded away foil EDH staples or something. Like, somehow he just values you every time. So then you're like, ah. Then you go to get your pairings. Oh, Scott McCallum against James Kong. Fucking James Kong! So you sit down. What's up, fucking James Kong? How are you? And he's like, I'm good. And you're like, great. That's fucking great. Like, you just said your dog died. Or fuck you, fucking James Kong. Let's play. And it's all in good fun. So we play a game. And he just absolutely fucking crushes you with no remorse. No remorse at all. So he plays. This is what James Kong does. He will take a real deck that is a tier 2-ish, and then he will brew it up a bit. And he doesn't brew it up like a fucking certain couple of brewers we know on the internet. He brews it up in, like, such a crazy way that you, like, on paper you look at it and you're like, what the fuck is this pile of garbage? But in practice, you're like, holy shit! So, we're playing... He's like, Jeremy's playing against him. He's playing like Rug-ish. He plays a Morph. And this is game two. Jeremy has seen Mystic, the Rug Mystic that flips.
Rattle Claw.
Yeah. So he's like, what Morphs is he playing? And I'm like, I don't know. What's he playing? Beamer? So like Rattle Claw or fucking Phoenix probably? And he's like, yeah, okay. And then I go back to playing my match against Sam. And then I turned back to Jeremy, and Jeremy was at, like, 18 life or something, or 10 life or something like that, and beating James Kong down. I go back to Jeremy, like, 2 minutes later, and he's, like, packing his shit up, and I'm like, yeah, you lost, right, to fucking James Kong? He's like, yeah, fucking James Kong. I'm like, how did you lose? He played a Rattleclaw Mystic as a Morph. You just fucking, you didn't kill it? Why didn't you just kill it? Like, he's like, no, it wasn't a fucking Rattleclaw Mystic. It was, that...
Sagu Mauler.
It was a Sagu Mauler! And I'm like, what the fuck is a Stegu Mauler? And he's like, it's like a fucking 80-80 Trampler flying hexproof fucking fireball. Oh.
The Simic Sky Squaller.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, it's a Simic Sky Squaller. Oh, okay. Fucking James Kong, eh? Hey, James, how many of those are you playing in your deck? He's like, hey. Well, great. Fucking James Kong. But anyway, I'm playing Sam. And in game two, I have sideboarded in my super spicy brews of, what's it called? The Glare of Heresies, and then regular sideboarding. I don't have the hair on my balls yet to put in the Reclamation Sages. So I don't know what Sam's playing at all. He's playing some version of Mardu, but I think I saw, like, one Cackling Doom, and I didn't really see anything else. I don't know if he's playing the control version with Planeswalkers, or if he's playing the creature version with Butcher of the Horde. He could be playing four color, and I only saw Mardu colors. Like, I don't really know what he's playing, and I don't really know the deck that well either, because not a whole lot of people play it near me. So I just do some sideboarding. I'm like, he's playing Mardu. He could be playing Butcher of the Horde. So I want to have this Glare of Heresy to get that Butcher, maybe, and, you know, just some sideboarding, whatever. He goes, I play a Rhino and drain him. He untaps and immediately plays Chain to the Rocks. And Jeremy's watching my game. And I'm like, ah, fuck. I have nothing in my deck that gets a fucking Chain to the Rocks. And I go to James Kong, who is Sagu Maulering Jeremy. Because James Kong will know the answer to this question. I go, is there anything in Standard that kills lands? And James is like, I don't know, nothing good. As he's playing Stegu Maulers. So I am like, okay, fuck. I go to draw my card, thinking like, it's over. I have nothing really in my hand but some removal. He's obviously not playing any creatures. I haven't seen shit. I don't have any action. My only action was this fucking rhino that he... Oh, Glare of Heresy. Ah, that's great. Glare of Heresy, you're fucking chained to the rocks. Get my rhino back. Lightning Helix you. Go. And he's just like, what the fuck? Proceed to draw three more rhinos and win the game. Ah, so good. So good. So then I go to a quick 3-0, doing the same thing basically all day. I go to a quick 3-0. In round four, this guy comes to sit down, and I'm like, hey, do you want to draw? Because if we draw, we both get 12 points, these stupid vicinity points. But if we play and one of us loses, then one of us only gets, like, fucking 8 points, which is worthless, and one of us gets 16, which is a fair number. But, I mean, I'm fine if we both get 12. I feel like that's a better deal. And the guy's like, yeah, okay, sure, let's do that. And he's like, do we both get the promo? And I'm like, ooh, I actually don't know, because fucking James Kong is 3-0, and he's not drawing. So, James, you fucking asshole, you're going to go 4-0, and you're going to take our fucking promos, aren't you? And he's like, no, if you go 3-1, you get a promo as well. Oh, okay, great. So we, or 3-0-1. So we draw, and we decide to play it out for fun. Now, I have this stupid curse where if we play it out for fun, I fucking crush you. Every time. If we don't play it out for fun, if I offer the draw, or you offer the draw, and we decline, then you crush me. Absolutely. It sucks. So anyway, we play it out. Of course, I'm going to crush this guy. And so in game two, of or three of the match, because in game one, he just smashes me. I have no chance. In game two, he's playing Abzan midrange, by the way. In game two, I smash him. He has no chance. In game three, I'm like, fuck it. This game doesn't matter at all. I don't even care about properly sideboarding. I'm going to make a 15-card sideboard. And I sideboard in 4 Reclamation Sages, 3 Glare of Heresies. I think I sideboarded in some form of Drown in Sorrows and Abzan Charms. And then Murderous, like a Singleton Murderous Cut. How many cards is that? 4, 8, 11, 12. So I must have found 3 other cards somewhere, and I can't remember what they are. And so we're playing, and he goes, turn 3, Courser of Kruphix. And I go, turn 3, Courser of Kruphix. He goes, turn 3, Courser of Kruphix. I go, draw my card. Oh, Reclamation Stage right on time. That's perfect. I guess I'll kill your fucking Courser of Kruphix. And he's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, because it's an enchantment. And he's like, what? Oh. Oh. And then he plays a fucking rhino. Yeah, I'll just Glare of Heresy that. Then he plays another courser. Oh, I draw another Reclamation Sage. His Doomblades that can deal 2 damage are great. So, yeah, it was pretty good. I'm obviously, I don't think that you should be playing 4...
Reclamation Sages
in your sideboard. But against the whip deck, it kills their stupid guys. It kills their Doomwake Giant. It kills their Coursers, and it kills their whip.
True.
So, you know.
Can't be all bad.
Can't be all bad. So, and get the random fucking Chain to the Rocks. Like, I didn't even realize that was a real card.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's being played fairly widely right now, actually.
Yeah, like, as soon as he played it, I was like, wow, that is a real card. That is a real card. Like, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, drew a Glare of Heresy. Fuck it. Fuck your card. Sorry, buddy. Like, and the guy sitting next to me, because Jeremy's on one side, and then this other random guy who knows who I am, but I don't know who he is, so if you're listening right now, sorry, buddy. He's like, oh, right on time! And I'm like, shut up. Like, obviously I'm playing this, but I don't want him to know that I just drew it. Shut up. Yeah, pretty good. I liked it.
That's awesome.
The old 6 drain from a single rhino is pretty fucking good.
Yes.
I wish there, like, could you imagine if we had, like, Momentary Blink or Cloud Shift in this format? Ugh. That would probably be worse. I would probably hate it.
So that's, lots of stuff going on from Magic. Lots of, I guess. You know a card I don't miss? Lifebane Zombie.
You don't miss Left Behind Zion?
I never had to play against it.
Nope. I was like obsessed with Green Deck, so I played against it a lot, and I'm really glad that it's gone. Fuck.
I was always playing it. So
yeah,
I know.
Yeah. So I'm pretty pleased that it's seen its day in the sun. So nice.
Scott, so are you looking to play out of all the versions? I'm not familiar with all the different Abzan versions. There's Chapin's that has Brimaz and stuff. There's right now I'm trying out Sean's list because, you know, I have much respect for him.
Yeah.
He's got a hilarious deck tech in on the premium side of FCG where he's just goofing around.
I plan to watch all of his videos kind of like tonight/tomorrow. I've been talking to Phil because he frequents my stream quite regularly, good old P-Sams, and he has some pretty strong feelings about, I mean, he himself is sort of in the Jeskai camp, but he's very much in the, there are two decks that you, there are like two major card classes that you should be playing, and they are like Thoughtseize or Jeskai Ascendancy.
Right.
And so you should absolutely be playing one of those cards. He is very high as far as the Abzan goes. It's really the mid-range deck is where it's at. And it's not even the mid-range deck. It's the fact that you play the control deck. So when you look at Sean's list as an example, and I think his main deck is basically where I would be. I think the only flex slot, I think, is Drown in Sorrow, and you kind of have to make your decision there. You really play this as a control deck, and that's what it is. Because the Abzan cards want you to grind, right? You have all of these absurdly powerful threats, and like every single spell that you can cast out of this deck is gas, right? Even mm-hmm. the carry it is, so it's just gas. And you play a bunch of Scrylands and all that stuff so that you just play whatever you need to when you get it. And as long as you're going to play this like a control deck, then I think you're doing it right. And that's where I'm looking to explore. So I'm actually actively interested in that. I don't like Sean's sideboard very much, and I much prefer sort of Dan Jessup's, who is too. So the card that I'm so unimpressed with in as I'm talking to more and more people is Sorin. And Sorin Solemn Visitor is just really, really unimpressive.
Yeah, I sideboard him out almost every single match.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, his lifelink ability is sweet, but it's only sweet sort of after an Elspeth.
Yep.
Or if you're
or
playing...
when they're fucked.
Yeah, when you're, like, so far ahead, right? So, I'm not... So, I don't really like Sorin. So, builds that are eschewing Sorin, I'm interested in.
Okay.
Jessup's list plays to Sorin, but basically, other than that, his 60 cards is exactly identical to Sean's, except Sean plays two Nissa... and one Drown in Sorrow instead of the two Sorin. So I can get behind the Nissa, and as far as the Drown in Sorrow main deck, I might just play a main deck Vile Blight. Because the other thing that I'm finding is difficult for me is late game. Actually, it's probably a Murderous Cut. It's probably the extra card that I play, because I just find your hand gets glutted with all of these cards. Mm-hmm. And every card is a bomb. Like, I was watching this streamer guy, Fatsuno. I was watching him. He just came back, and he was piloting this list. And I'm, like, watching him play these games against the Jeskai Tokens deck. And, like, sure, he's playing a Rhino. He's got a Courser, you know, whatever. But I'm looking at his hand, and it's, like, Utter End, Downfall, Downfall, Abzan Charm, Elspeth, you know? And he's got, like, four or five lands. So it's, like, how many of these spells are you legitimately casting per turn? Like, this is going to sound terrible, and I can't believe I'm actually going to say this, but... So Hearthstone came out on the Android tablet this week, and I've had Hearthstone forever, and I've never played it. But as soon as it came out for Android tablet, I started to play it. And, yeah. I mean, it's a great game if you need to kill 15 minutes. You know, like...
Oh, yeah, and that's the thing, is I play a ton of it.
Yeah, and so,
it actually fits my schedule really good.
Right, and one of the things that has really stood out to me as far as game mechanics goes, because, I mean, like, there's a lot of people that I have a lot of respect for that still think that the game has got a lot of high quality. AJ had a lot of really good things to say about it, so I'm like, well, I've already got this account, like, I might as well just try to do something with it. So, but one of the major, most important things to consider about Hearthstone is mana efficiency. And making sure that you're getting the most out of your resources every turn. And I couldn't help but think of that when I was watching this game where he's just sitting with these infinity removal spells in his hand and, like, literally his thumb up his ass because he had nothing else to do. And he's just like, kill one spell, leave three lands untapped or two lands untapped. And it's just like, what are you doing with that extra mana? Like, you're just wasting your resources.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if I'm going to look at an Abzan deck, that's one of the things that I'm not sure about. That's one of the questions that I'm seeking an answer for, is how can we best manipulate our mana, or is that why playing like eight temples is right? You know, because like you'll find yourself with these turns where you get to like play a removal spell and play a temple tapped to scry. You know, because like once you start getting into like 5, 6, 7 mana, like you're jamming, you know, dumb planeswalkers and bombs anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not 100% sure yet. It's a question that I'm seeking an answer for, and I recognize that it's not something that's as relevant in your aggro deck, Jay, because you've got tons of mana sinks available to you already.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's a big reason why you play the cat. So that like they're not bad. Like they're still like, I don't know, because like the deck's weird. You're trying to put a lot of pressure on them. Yeah, I am. Right now I'm scratching both of my nipples. You're trying to put a lot of pressure on them, but you're not as fast as they are in terms of, like, on their turn 3, they can have 3 guys. On their turn 3, they can have haste guys. On their turn 4, they can be cracking you in the air so hard. Or, three, they can have Mantis Rider. So you're trying to put pressure on them, but at the same time, it's almost like you're playing less of a aggro deck is more of like a tempo deck where you're sticking a threat and then removing shit out of the way of that one threat. But the thing with those decks is like when you draw them late, they're the worst draws on the planet, right? You don't want to draw a fucking Death Dealer late. Like that guy doesn't do anything. So it's good when, you know, they have abilities where that makes them somewhat relevant, or drawing like a Fleecemane Lion late so you can make it indestructible, like indestructible and hexproof. Like that stuff's really great. To have mana to sink into. But yeah, I find there's sometimes if you don't draw properly, like if you don't get those draws, there's a lot of turns, yeah, where like if they don't have anything, you just have like 5 removal spells in your hand and you're not doing anything every turn.
Yeah.
You know, you're just drawing, oh, I drew a temple. Oh, I scryed a land. I guess that goes to the bottom. Oh, drew a land. Fucking great. You know, like that happens a lot. And then you're just like, well, what am I going to do with these three heroes downfalls? Wait till he plays his Elspeth, I guess.
Yeah. And so that's like that's a problem,
mm-hmm.
as far as I can tell. And if I had to have any sort of criticism about the deck, that's one of them. Because when you compare that to a deck like the Temple or like the Tokens deck, Jeskai Tokens, like there's a million ways to use this mana really efficiently. It's got a lot of spells that can be cast at instant speed, allowing you sort of like flexibility of when you pick your spots. But
yeah.
You know, a variety of mana costs as well to, you know, that are all supported by that instant speed paradigm. So, you know, you kind of are at these interesting decisions with the Abzan list and comparatively. So I'm not 100% sure where I sit on it yet. And I'm sure that it's going to be sort of like, I mean, if you really sit down and look at the Abzan mid-range lists, there's probably only like 3 slots in the sideboard that you can fuck around with and 3 slots in the main deck, honestly.
Yeah, there's not. You don't have a whole lot of room to move.
No,
stuff.
And I mean that's for the mid range list, obviously, right? If you're playing the aggro list, that's a totally different situation. You know, there's different things to consider, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the mid range decks go, that's basically the truth of it right now. So until some absurd cards come back or come out, that's what you're dealing with. So I don't know. Like, I do like the fact that people are no longer relying on Wingmate Rock, because that's a card that I felt was like really unimpressive for me, I think, during my initial testing. Like, if you're ever in the position where you can actually, like, play and get value off a Wingmate Rock, you've probably already won that game anyway.
Yeah. Like, Wingmate Rock, I find two things. It's really good in multiples.
Yes.
And it's really good on paper.
Yes, because you really have to ask yourself, it's actually probably just not as good as another Siege Rhino. There are very few occasions where it is, most of the time, just because it's by virtue of it being a flyer.
Yeah.
But aside from that, like...
But, like, I find that there's almost no times when I can rate it. And when you're not rating it, it's actually not that great.
Agree.
But on paper, looking at it, I'm just like, how the fuck do you not just jam four of these guys and, like, just go to town? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you... It's on paper, it's such a good card, especially for white, where you can just throw shit away constantly by having tokens and brimazes and et cetera to run into it, you know what I mean? And, like, but it just, on paper, it's really great, but I don't find it does anything for me if I'm not, like, I almost would always rather just have a Siege Rhino. Yeah. Or even a Mantis Rider, like I said, like, Mantis Rider seems really good. It's so difficult to, like, get rid of because of the haste and vigilance. Like, yeah. You have to have the removal now, and if you don't, then it does, you know, it does crazy things.
Beats down.
Yeah.
It's cool that you brought up Windmate Rock, Scott, because I just played one 8-man with Sean's deck, mm-hmm. and it's my first experience with Abzan whatsoever, and what I had trouble most was, I think where its hole is, it's flying creatures, but not just flying creatures, but flying creatures that can make more than one guy. So Hornet Queen seemed like a nightmare for me to deal with.
Yeah.
I couldn't win. And Windmate Rock just, like, owns me because I'm just playing all these one-for-ones, like Abzan Charm and Hero's Downfall. I can kill one half of it if I wanted to, but the other half is a problem, and the only way I feel comfortable is if I'm able to have Dune Blast in my hand, because Elspeth doesn't even deal with the Windmate Rocks or the Hornet Queen right. and its tokens.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing that as actually a whole...
it's
like
a
match
mirror,
that card I don't see. Sorry?
It's a great card in the mirror.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I just played against it, and I'm just like, holy shit. And there's nothing really in my sideboard to deal with it, except that I just have to play towards this Dune Blast, I guess maybe even End Hostilities if I try to get him by having him overcommit. So it's interesting that I feel it's a hole in the deck.
I think End Hostilities is certainly sort of there to account for Windmate Rock. Like, I absolutely agree with that, because you kind of have to force your opponent into, I mean, Dune Blast, obviously, but as far as, like, the extra End Hostilities in the sideboard, like, I think that they really are designed to, because by virtue of Wingmate Rock's ability, they have to overcommit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they have to play into the board. They have to develop a board. They have to have creatures that they can attack with that they're either, like, attacking profitably with, or they're just killing. Like, they're throwing away.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. Like, if they're just throwing a creature away to make a Wingmate Rock, I mean...
But I mean, like, when that creature is, like, a token of Brimaz or something, like, that's pretty good.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
That's what I like. Like, that's what I mean. Like, playing it in a deck where you're playing, like, there's a deck at my local store that a buddy of mine is playing, and he's played it basically for the same reason I am. He's playing it because he's sick of seeing aggro decks,
mm.
but he doesn't want to play blue-white control or something.
Sure, like. Sure.
So, what he's playing is red-white, like burn aggro kind of thing, and he's playing Purphoros with Brimaz,
yeah,
which is fucking bonkers. Like, attack, shock you, block, shock you, Wingmate Rock, shock you, just fucking insanity. And then he's playing some other cards, but, like, I find, like he wasn't playing Wingmate Rock, and so I talked to him about it, and just to see, like, just to test it out, just see what he, like, if he likes it. But it works so well for him because he has, like, things that make his tokens more powerful, right? Like spears or whatever. Then he has Purphoros. Then he has tokens he can always just constantly throw away.
To turn on Wingmate Rock, yeah.
Yeah, and then he has, like, Rabble Master, which makes the token have to attack, right?
Yeah.
So there's times where you're just like, well, I guess I make a token because I have to, and I guess it attacks because it has to. And then they're like, yeah, like, block your token. And then, oh, I guess I'll make a Wingmate Rock. Like,
yeah.
So I think Wingmate Rock works really well in a deck like that. But the problem is the decks that are like that right now don't want cards at 5. They don't want a dragon, right? They want to kill you before that with multiple spells and prowess triggers.
Yeah. I'm 90% sure that if Wingmate Rock costs 4 mana, or even was, like, fucking white, white, white one, or something stupid like that. Like,
yeah, or, like,
somehow
a 3-3.
Yeah. If it made, well, I think if it made 2/3/3 at 4 mana, it would be like, it'd be good, but I think it's still in the fair and balanced mode, because like Bioblight still, no, Bioblight wouldn't kill it. It wouldn't kill both, right?
No, it's 3/3 it would.
Yeah, but it wouldn't kill both, because they're not named the same thing.
Oh, right, yeah.
So maybe that's fine. I mean, it still dies to Bolt and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anger of the Gods, right? Yeah. But like, the fact that it's 4, ugh. Such
well, and then there's that new card coming out.
That's a nice segue. I like that. Let's talk about those.
Right, 2 mana, fucking 2 mana, and it's, what is it, Wrath or Exile? No, Indestructible.
Yeah, so it got released, it got leaked because I think it's in Reed Duke's article for this week or whatever, but Valorous Stance is a card that's been spoiled from Fate Reforged. It's an instant at uncommon. It costs white 1, and it's choose 1, target creature gains indestructible until end of turn, or destroy target creature with toughness 4 or greater.
Yeah, I like that.
So I think that's fucking sweet.
Reprisal Charm.
Is it an instant?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Is it really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Because, like, Valorous Stance your Brimass? Nope. Valorous Stance my Brimass?
Oh, my God.
Right? Like, ugh. God. Valorous Stance your Seadrano? Nope. Like, this card's dumb. This card's going to see a lot of play. Even if it's a sideboard card, it's going to see a... But I think the versatility is really good. Hard to keep that on the board, but... We already knew about Yasova, Dragonclaw, and Crux of Fate. We talked about both those cards before. But there was actually one more card that was spoiled just today. It's called Sandstep Mastodon.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, so I think it's the Buy a Box promo, or it's one of the Game Day promos. But it's a 5/5 rare out of Abzan. It's got the Abzan watermark on it. And it's green 5 for a 5/5 with reach. It's an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
When Sandstep Mastodon enters the battlefield, bolster 5. So we introduce the new keyword called bolster. And what that says is that when this creature enters the battlefield, basically you pick a creature with the lowest toughness on your side of the table and put that many 1/1 counters on it.
The lowest toughness?
Yeah, and then you put whatever the bolster number of 1/1 counters on it. So this is going to make a 5/5 reach. And put 5/1/1 counters on a creature.
What the fuck?
So if this is
your only creature, it's a 10/10 reach.
It's a 10/10 reach for 7 mana.
Jesus.
If there's a tie, you get to pick one.
And that does that have an activated ability, or is it just a come into play ability?
It's an enter the battlefield ability. So buy your fucking griffs, man.
Yep. Jesus.
Yeah. So that's what we're dealing with. That is the new today.
That's the new tomorrow.
Man, that mechanic, depending, like, I feel like that mechanic's fucking insanity. If they print that on a bunch of different cards,
yeah,
that card is, that mechanic's too good. Which means what they'll probably do is not print it on a bunch of different cards to balance it. They'll print it on a bunch of, like, big fatties that cost a million.
Well, I mean, who cares? If it's bolster 1, who cares?
No, that's bonkers. Like a 2/2 for 2 that is a 3/3 for 2? Or a 2/2 for 2 that makes your Land War Elf a 2/2?
Bolster may say, it is a little foggy. Bolster may make it, may require it to be other creatures. So maybe if that's the case, that makes sense, because you shouldn't be able to make a 10/10 reach for 7 mana.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care what fucking state of design we're living in. There is no world in which a 10/10 reach for 7 mana with no drawback is acceptable. I don't care how green the creature is.
Yeah. It seems too good.
Excessive? Much?
Yeah.
But, anyways, my 2 cents. But I think it's sweet. I think that the new mechanic's nice. I can't wait for Fate Reforged. I think it's going to do some pretty good stuff for us from as a set perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. I like it.
It seems very cool. I wonder if it's going to be 5 color again. I'm kind of interested. I'm interested to see if they just kind of follow the same old with Magic storylines, too.
What do you mean?
Well, where they just make it like, oh, the clans are fighting, and then they're merging, and then Nicol Bolas is back. Ooh. You know, like, it's just... If they're going to make it like the same old, same old... People love the same old, same old. That's why it's the same old, same old. But, you know?
Yeah.
They don't call it the same old, same new.
That's a true fact.
Maybe they should.
Maybe they should. The same old, same new. But yeah, I think it'll be... speaking of... I guess that's a good way... Another good segue. Speaking of Fate Reforged... I, in January, will be doing the stream with Tyler Bloom for the Sentry Box's pre-release.
Nice.
Of Fate Reforged.
Sweet.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hopefully, we can get some pretty sweet analysis on the show before I go in there and make an idiot of myself with, Pro Tour winner. Or is it Pro Tour? No, GP winner. Sorry, GP yeah, winner, GP Tyler winner. Bloom. But yeah, so
reason to get one of those.
I think that'll be fun. So hopefully it kind of works out, kind of thing. I think it'll be a good time.
Nice. Oh, I definitely think it'll be a good time. I think you'll really enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
And Tyler's a good kid when he was on the show, so
yeah,
I'm sure it's gonna be fun.
I think we'll work well together. So
nice. Is he Blumley on Twitch?
I don't have any idea.
No, you should ask
him. I do not know.
You should ask him next time you see him, because, like, Blumley is always in my Twitch channel, and he often is a wealth of astute information.
Oh, possible.
It very well could be.
You could ask
and that's
him
sort of what leads
stream.
Me to believe that it might actually be him.
You could ask him when he's on your stream.
I mean, that's distinctly possible.
You know.
That's distinctly possible. I could consider that fact in the future.
Yeah.
So, what else we got this week? Anything?
I didn't do anything else.
I'm
making lots of big changes to my cube.
Oh, yeah?
But you can see on the Cube Tutor site. But lots of ins and then lots of outs kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't been playing it much. I haven't gotten the chance to play it.
Just not have friends anymore?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. So, and, everyone's been busy, and then there's these PPTQs on certain weekends and stuff, so...
Yeah, it sounds like all the Calgary ones are going to be happening right away.
Yeah, so I don't get to play for a little bit anyway, but... But I've been making lots of changes.
Are there, do you want to share a couple of those with us before we go? Like, are they philosophical changes?
Sure. Well, I think I might have talked a little bit about it last week, but we got a bunch of cards in. So a lot of them were, like, making red and white is the focus, making them better.
Okay.
Because they were pretty bad, and now they're very good. Like, I was talking last week about, like, it's towards the end of the episode if you get a chance to listen to it. But both things like drafting, like pick one, pack one, like madcap skills first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then like some of the decks that are being drafted, like we're just ending up being like just super good. Like, let's see what somebody else drafted as mono red aggro. So they drafted Goblin Guide, Jackal Pups, Swift Spear, Stromkirk Noble, and Flame Slash for one drops. That's pretty good. And then their two drops are Sudden Shock, Lightning Mauler, Keldon Marauders, Ash Zealot, Stormblood Berserker, The Shrine, Valley Dasher, which I'm not sure how much I like Valley Dasher. Like,
Valley Dasher is a terrible...
I think it is a terrible card, but I just feel like if like in red and cube, so many of the one drops are like super relevant on turns one and two. That having a Valley Dasher, like, just is adding to the pressure there. Like, when I'm playing, like, blue or green, and I'm sitting here, like, and you go Goblin Guide into Valley Dasher, like, I am in a bad spot. I am depressed. You know? But it is a bad... I feel like it is a bad card, and it'll probably get cut. Mostly because people won't be able to get over the fact that it's a bad card, so they won't draft it. Versus, like, it's a situationally bad card, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah.
And then he has Gorehouse, Chainwalker, and Hellspark Elemental. So out of ones and two drops, he already has fucking, what is this? 5, 10, 15, 16, 17, 18. He has 18 cards in his one and two drop slot.
Wow.
Then he's playing Flame Javelin, which is great, Sulfuric Vortex, Chandra's Phoenix, and D2 Slinger, which is the come into play Shock a Creature or player.
Yep.
For three drop. For four drops, it's Fanatic of Mogus, which is insane in this deck.
Yeah.
And Avalanche Riders. And then his five drops are Sarkhan, Stormbreath Dragon, and Zealous Conscript.
Yikes.
And his final card is Fire Blast, which, which is really not a six drop.
No. No, and then, like, oh, it's a zero.
Yeah, and then, like, cards in his sideboard that would be good in his deck still are, like, not many, but, like, Siege Game Commander, and Precursor Golem, and Gutter Snipe.
Wow.
And this is the caliber of red deck now that is average.
Wow.
This is the average caliber of the red deck in the cube now, which I'm very happy about, because the problem with the red and the white deck is, for red, you're either playing big fat dragons and splashing them, or playing them in a deck that plays big fat dragons. The mono red, like the mono red aggro decks, were not very good at all. They could get you down. They have the same problem that mono red has in real formats like standard and stuff, where they can get you down to like six, and then they can never finish the game.
Yeah.
Right. So I feel like I've now made that a lot better. And then right now I'm working on white is the next closest thing. And I think with white I'm gonna test the waters a little bit and try to move it into like a white weenie with tokens, like where you're making a bunch of tokens and making them like vigilant and first strike and +2/+2 and indestructible, just things like that, like things that do that.
Sweet.
So in the latest update I did, what did I do? I did Gather the Townsfolk, Crusade, Honor the Pure. I added some of the temples that were missing that I thought would be good. Flicker Wisp, Soltari Monk, Champion of the Parish.
It's really like going deep on supporting that theme too.
Yeah, and I white didn't really have an identity before that. White was a really good support color. So you would play white in blue white control for the Wraths. You would play white in white green ramp for the Wraths, the removal, the Planeswalkers, right? But there wasn't really, like, a white deck that felt good, if that makes
sense. Yeah, it does. Makes perfect sense.
So, this, I feel like all those cards are still in. I'm not cutting Wraths or anything.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you don't want that, or now if there's two cards in the pack, there's going to be players that are picking Honor of the Pure over Wrath of God, and vice versa. And yeah. Now white is more diverse in that you'll have two white decks at the table now instead of, like, what are you playing? Oh, I'm playing the white-blue control. What are you playing? Oh, I'm playing white-black reanimator.
Yeah.
We're fighting over the same cards, but we don't really care if we get them. You know?
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to change blue because blue has the most cards in the cube. Let's actually take a look. Blue has the most cards in the cube, but, oh no, it doesn't anymore. White does. So blue used to at like 90, and okay. now blue's down to 86, and white is the highest at 89. And then black and red are at 77 and 78, so that's like a pretty high disparity.
Mm-hmm.
And then green is at 80. So pretty, like, there's a pretty big difference between, say, like, the white and the blue, and then the black and the red and the green.
Yeah.
The problem, though, is that, like, black is really linear. You're playing big, cheap spells that are, like, powerful.
You don't like the mono-black aggro deck?
No, well, I do. I like it a lot, but nobody else does.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to eventually change it, I think, into that. I'm going to start cutting stuff. It's just really difficult to justify cutting things like Grave Titan
yeah.
or Dark Confidant. Right, sure. like I recently cut Necropotent.
Yeah,
and like Necropotent,
I can see cutting Dark Confidant.
I can too. Like, and the thing is, like, nobody's playing Dark Confidant, so why are you playing it in your cube? It's one more card that takes the spot, right? But the thing is, like, yeah. How do you cut cards like fucking Packrat and Bloodgast and Gravecrawler and the Spectres and the Nighthawks and the, so what I'm trying to do is increase the aggro with the more powerful aggro spells. Because before, the aggro was a high content, right? Carnophages, all the two drop, or all, I'm sorry, all the two power one drops, all of them. Then some of the three power and two power two drops that were powerful. But the problem is that those cards, like on paper, those cards don't look very good and they're not exciting in queue, right? But it's only when you cobble them all together where they become really good. And so a lot of players have a problem seeing the whole picture and not just seeing the card, right? Like, if you open a pack and there's a, like a pack rat, obviously you're taking, but if you open a pack and there's, like, a vampire, I don't know, a vampire Nighthawk in it.
Yeah.
And a Bloodghast and a Gravecrawler and there's a Tameo and a Chaos Orb and a Planar Cleansing. Like, 99% of the time in my playgroup, nobody was taking any of those black cards. So the problem became that, like, those black cards just keep going around, but because no one's playing them, they're not even, like, there's not even one guy at the table that's getting every single card, right? And the problem with black, too, is that it's best at killing things, and almost all of its removal is splashable, right? You can play a Doomblade in a fucking blue-white deck if you needed it, right?
Yeah.
You could play a Doomblade in a mono-red deck if you needed it, right? So I'm slowly going to work on black next, but right now I'm focusing on white and red because black, even though it doesn't really have its own deck, it is constantly getting played because all of the black support cards. And white and red are barely getting played, right? At the time, half the cards weren't even getting played in red because there was no mono-red deck and there was no white weenie deck. They were all high-end. So, you know, I've added things in the white deck like that. Commander helped with things like in Containment Priest, and with things like, oh, I added, like, Doom Traveler was a card that, like, isn't super exciting that used to be in the cube way back when, but, you know, it's come back because it's, you know, cards like that are helpful to this strategy kind of thing. And then in terms of, like, Commander, there was that Containment Priest. There's also that 3-drop guy. Oh, here he is. Hallowed Spirit Keeper, where he's a 3-2 Vigilance for 3, which I think is powerful enough by itself. But when he dies, you get a bunch of spirits equal to the guys in your yard, right? So guys like that are good. Champion of the Parish, I didn't have in the cube until I counted up all the humans and realized that this guy's fucking bonkers.
Yeah.
You know, so, and the thing, too, is that, I like cards like Champion of the Parish, and some of my playgroup like it, too. It's a card where you are trying to build around it. It's fine on its own. And naturally, in the colors that you're going to be playing it, you're going to have humans, right?
Yeah.
Like, almost all of the 2-drop, 2-power, 1-drop guys, like Soldier of the Pantheon, Student of Warfare, Doom Traveler, Elite Vanguard, almost all of those, like, those 1-drops that you're going to be playing and looking for anyway, and then almost all of the 2-drops as well, like Opposing Sovereign, Containment Priest, Cloistered Youth, a Quarter Paladin, like, all these guys are humans. And they're not humans that you're forced to build around. Like, you're naturally, you want a Quarter Paladins, and you want Imposing Sovereigns in your deck, right? So he becomes really powerful. So that's kind of coming together. And then blue, I'm sort of trying to change blue. Blue has the most cards in the cube, but none of its cards do anything. Like, if that makes sense. Like, there's all these Planeswalkers that are really good. There's a bunch of fucking counter spells. Like, there's 34 instants in blue.
Yeah.
Which is the most out of all colors, and it's by, like, a huge margin. Like, the closest is black, I think. Black and red are tied for 17, because black has all the Doomblades, and red has all the burn. Yeah. And that's still half of what blue has. Right? So, like, I'm trying to cut some of the blue cards that are, like, just good blue cards, but aren't good in the deck or in the cube, right? So, and I'm trying to change it into things like Chasm Skulker. I'm trying to put that card in and, you know, things like that. I'm trying to decide if I want to have Manowar and Aether Adept in the cube.
Yep.
And if I do, which I think I should, then I want to start putting in cards that make a deck with those cards instead of just having them in the cube. Because right now, as they sit, they're just cards that are sometimes good, but are most of the time just 15th picks that don't do anything. Because there's no, like, blue, like, tempo deck. There's no, like, that's not a real deck that exists.
No Delver to go?
Exactly. Like, and it's, and like, you have to remember that the, like, Delver deck in Standard was a perfect deck for that meta, but, like, are you going to play Gitaxian Probe in your cube? Like, that's not a, that card's not good enough.
Yeah.
And the other problem with that is that everybody can draft your Gitaxian Probe. So now your Delver deck doesn't even get that card.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
And that, so that's a real concern you have to have. I did put in, now that you mention it, though, I, in the same update that I put in Chasm Skulker, I put in a fucking Delver of Secrets.
Nice.
Finally, I put in, the two big baddies right now, which are Treasure Cruise and
Dig Through Time
foils. I found a Talran, the Sky Summoner.
Sweet.
So I feel like that deck is starting to, like, come together, right? Like, if you're playing a Delver, flipping it, and then holding up, like, a counter or a bounce, and then playing, like, Aether Adept, Bouncer guy, and then playing a Talrand and holding up counters and bounce, you don't need a whole lot of guys to kill them. And that's the deck that I'm looking at. So, well, I'm trying to just change it from all the blue spells, just basically being, like, what type of control would you like to play? Blue is the color you'll be playing today.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So yeah, so that's kind of good. I put in a Future Sight to see if that card is very cool.
Okay.
It seems fun to me. I mean, it's a little heavy on the blue, right? Triple blue.
Yeah, I haven't ever really enjoyed any deck or really wanted for Future Sight in sort of any deck casually, even like for Cube. Like, it just seems like it's one of those cute cards, but, I mean, you kind of have to enable some dumb shit with it.
Yeah. Mainly, I want to see what happens when Brian opens it.
Yeah, that's fair.
for me, Upheaval and Future Sight are the same card to me. Okay. I would cut them both in a heartbeat. Mostly because I don't know how to play them. I don't know what makes them good. Like people have told me, and I'm just like, when I'm drafting, I just can't see that deck. I can't make that deck.
Mm-hmm.
But then I end up, of course, passing the Hypernut. Like, we played against Curly in a cube once.
Yep.
Yeah.
And only played one fucking time. This is the same fucking cube where I passed him a pack with Wormcoil Engine in it for some stupid reason. And he had Aether Searcher as his first card.
Mm-hmm.
I also passed him an Upheaval because I was like, I don't know how to fucking play this card, and I'm playing something else. Like, I was playing, like, Black-White Reanimator or something, right? And he just ranched everybody with that card, but I don't know how to play it. And I've seen it work. I've seen Brian play the deck with mana and mana rocks and mana guys, and I don't know how to play it. It just doesn't work for me. So for me, I would cut those cards. But I feel like there's a group of players that get great enjoyment out of seeing a card like that, and as soon as they open a card like that, they instantly know what they want and what they need in that deck, and they'll draft it, and then they're enjoying it. And because it's not a normal deck, I think that I and my other players that are against them are also going to enjoy that. Like, I don't mind losing to an Upheaval when it gets played perfectly.
Sure.
When some guy's going, like land, it gets removed, land, or guy, it gets removed, guy, it gets removed, guy, it's sick, the other guy wraps, and then he Armageddons to try to, like, reset the game. That's garbage. You know what I mean? But, like, when you're playing, like, when you go Future Sight with an Oracle of Moldiah in play in your Simic Sky Swallower fucking Titan deck, how cool is that going to be?
Yeah.
Right?
That's fair.
Play two lands off the top, then play my Primeval Titan off the top, then search for lands, then fucking, you're dead. Why haven't you scooped yet, idiot? Like, that, you know what I mean? So I'm going to try it, but, like, I got kind of lucky with it, too. I like alternate art, and I like promos in my cube, if I can get them, right? Foils trump everything, except for alternate art. If there's an alternate art, and it's non-foil, I'll bite the bullet and buy it. So I got lucky, because I didn't realize this, but there's a Future Sight in, like, a Doodle deck somewhere down the line. Actually...
Future Sight?
Yeah, I have no idea what set this is from. It's, like, a weird... It looks like Conspiracy. I know it isn't. But the
Future Sight was a... There was a... Oh, yeah. Which one was that in? That was in, I think, the Jace versus...
No, was it the Speed... It was the Speed versus Cunning.
Oh, that's what it was. Speed versus Cunning, yes. Speed
versus Cunning.
Yeah.
So... And it looks really cool. It's like a big oak tree with like a heart, or I mean, sorry, a fetus in it. And then there's like two skulls. there's two skulls on either side of this tree that are like spiritual and shit. But it's like, it's a cool alternate art. But anyway, if this card ends up not working out and I have to cut it, I spent like $1 on it.
Nice.
Because it's an alternate art feature site and nobody wants that shit. Right? It came in a $10 dual deck. Right? So I got lucky, and like I said, if it doesn't work out, problem solved.
Well, I hope all of your cube adventures are amazing.
Yeah, I'd really like to get one in soon. You know?
Yeah.
It's been a while. So. But on the plus side, I've been playing lots of standards, so it's great.
That is good. I mean, you got to play something.
Absolutely. Definitely you should listen to last week's episode, because we talked a lot about it, and it was really great.
Okay. I will do so. I assure you, I will do so. Nice.
Nice.
Noise. Well, I mean, I guess that basically covers it. Who do you guys think is going to win the Players' Championship? We can just basically call it on this, I think.
The Duke.
The Duke?
I think it would be sweet.
The Duke or Ross?
Yeah, I would like the Duke to win.
Yeah, I'd go for the Ross. I can go for the Tom Ross. I think everybody knows exactly what he's going to be playing, and I think he knows that everyone knows exactly what he's going to be playing, and I don't think he gives a fuck about it. So, yeah Tom Ross.
Ballin' ass G.
Yep. Yep, Tom Ross. All right. Well, I guess that'll just about do it for us this week here on the A-Team, episode 209. Have a merry fucking Christmas.
Bitches. Also, I don't know if we're going to record, just for the viewers, we might not record this week, this week when you hear this, because Christmas is Thursday.
It is a thing that is happening.
So, just FYI. Oh, also, a short side note that we forgot to mention earlier.
If
we had to change the day that we're recording, and the day that we release the podcast, what day would you want it to be? And also, if you tell us in the comments, we'll actually listen to you. If you don't tell us in the comments, like normal, then I don't give a shit what you think.
But you guys did awesome with the comments this week. Like, many things in there that were just, like,
perfect.
A lot. There's a bunch of smart people who listen to our show, and they came out full force to comment, and I don't even know how to respond to a lot of this stuff, so I get confused. Somebody asked me what the term microaggression means, and
introduced it to a whole bunch of us.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I barely understand the concept. Like, there's a whole other world out there, and it blows my mind.
Mm-hmm. What was it that you said? Somebody's perception is their reality or something?
Yeah, a person's perception is their reality.
Yeah.
That's actually a thing that, like, that's common. That's just a phrase that I use a lot at work and stuff like that. And that's just, it's something I believe. So
what the fuck? Goblin Guide foil, Oracle of Moldiah foil, Spell Pierce foil all share the same price. Guess what that price is?
$30.
$40.
Yeah, there you go.
Foil Spell Pierce, $40. Well, I guess that's never going in the cubes. Suck on that. Fucking Jesus.
Yep. Wow.
Anyway, that's episode 209. Come back for
it. It was awesome.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
You're right.
Regarding the time, we're wrestling between recording Mondays and releasing Thursdays, or continuing to record Thursdays and releasing on your Mondays. So would you rather have more up-to-date content that comes out on Thursday, or are you okay with living in the fast and getting us to jumpstart your Mondays?
Yeah. Because I know that it is a big thing. People love to hear us on Monday.
It is. Yeah. It's a legitimate thing. I agree. Yeah. Completely.
And then, just to say the other side of it is that I always feel like when we're talking about what's coming up this weekend and stuff like that, we're so far in the past.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that there's a great value, especially when it seems like Magic News is all based weekend to weekend. Like, we all want to talk about big events. We're not, like, fine-picking news people on this site. We're not talking about, what's happening Monday to Friday. We're talking about what's happening on the weekends.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Can't wait to see you. I fell asleep, so Goodbye for him.
He's been battling in the standard daily.
What a
Has he?
No.
Is there a standard daily?
He's been watching a movie about sharks.
And NATOs.
Oh, a NATO.
Shark NATO. What a nightmare.
What a bad
I wish I was a nightmare. Wait a
Bye!
Second.
Bye!
Bye, guys.
Peace.
Damn.